The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And guess what's starting on Talk is Jericho? Finally, you knew it was coming. The Duff McKagan joke of the week, coronavirus version.
It's Jericho. It's Duff McKagan. I'm a little embarrassed to tell you this. I ran out of toilet paper, so I've started to use old newspapers. Yeah, the times are tough. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Too soon? I think that's all right. Hope all of you have enough toilet paper and are staying safe, healthy, and sane during the coronavirus emergency. I know there's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now, and the virus is causing a lot of problems for many of you, not just health-related, but financially, and people are kind of scared. But I'm still doing Talk is Jericho twice a week for all you guys to provide a little bit of an outlet for you and a little bit of forgetting about what's going on in the world, even though we're very cognizant of what's going on and very much not burying our heads in the sand. But there is a need to get your mind off things and to be entertained. And that's what I'm here for. And hopefully I can take you away from all of the world's problems for a while. A little entertainment, hopefully a few laughs, as we all practice social distancing and do the best we can during this tough time. And we knew it was time to reschedule Fozzy's Save the World Tour. They're supposed to start just in a few weeks in April. But if you bought tickets, good news, most of the shows have been rescheduled. And you just hold on to those tickets, hold on to that VIP meet and greet package that you bought. If you do need to get a refund, just take them back to point of purchase. And you'll be able to do that. FozzyRock.com with all the details. But as it stands right now, we're going to hit the road again July 10th in Columbus. July 11th, Grand Rapids. Go to FozzyRock.com and you'll find all that stuff. There's Indianapolis and Cutout, Wisconsin, Rockfest, Harrison, Ohio, Flint, Angola, Michigan, Belvedere, Fort Madison, Sioux Falls, Minot, Sturgis at the Iron Horse Saloon, famous place. And then the rescheduled dates in Lancaster, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Buffalo, Baltimore, Johnson City, Chattanooga, Charlotte, Nashville, and Savannah, plus Tampa and Orlando, the radio festivals. All throughout August and September. So go to FozzyRock.com if you want info, if you want to get tickets, if you want to wait and see what happens. We totally understand. We're just letting you know that hopefully when all this is said and done in a few weeks, a few months, Fozzy will be here for you to hold you in our loving arms and rock you hard, man. So I'm still set to play the Kiss Cruise as well on Halloween, setting sail October 30th. Remember, once again, all information at FozzyRock.com. So check that out and enjoy. All right, last week was a super secret double swerve on AEW Dynamite. First of all, it was Matt Hardy was revealed at the end of the show. He was on Talk is Jericho last Friday. And this Friday, we talked to the Exalted One. It was not Matt Hardy, but it was actually Brody Lee. How did that happen? Why did it happen? How has it kept such a secret? Why did Brody end up leaving WWE and coming to AEW? Many, many stories to tell, and all of them will be revealed right here on Talk is Jericho. So we had a huge episode of Dynamite a few weeks ago, days ago, with the double swerve debuts of Matt Hardy and Brody Lee. And the crazy thing is, the show was supposed to be in Rochester, New York.
New York.
Home of... Brody Lee.
Brody Lee. 7 days away. We got 7 days away.
Is that how far? Yeah.
So, yeah. So I knew I was at the gym Wednesday, March 11th, I think it is.
Yeah.
Around 9 p.m. I was DVRing the show and kind of following along. And I look up at the TV screen and the president's on making an address. And then my phone got an alert that Tom Hanks had come down with coronavirus. And then I got another alert that Rudy Gobert of the NBA had contracted it and that the NBA has now shut down. And I was pretty aware at that point that it was maybe over for a Rochester debut. So,
but it's funny because Rudy Gobert from which team?
Salt Lake, Utah.
Yeah.
Which you guys were in.
We were in that same venue where the Utah Jazz or whatever, Maverick course. Center.
Yep.
And it's so funny that you say that because I was in a match that night. Yep. We went to the ring.
Yep. Swags was telling me this on the way home last week. Yeah.
I had been speaking to Raphael Morphy, who's kind of our booking guy, and we worked together very closely. And it's like, you know, because I was like, if we could just get to Newark, get Blood and Guts done, and then it's the end of the season.
You said that last week, and I thought that was a genius idea of like shutting it down and letting that be the cliffhanger of, hey, that's the end of the season.
But I was thinking if we can even just get to Newark.
I know.
And then I walk in the ring, and then we walk out of the ring, and Raph's like, NBA's canceled, and Tom Hanks has coronavirus. Yep. So I'm like, so you're saying that New York Rochester's not going to happen? And it's like, oh, because we worked this whole thing to do the double swerve of the Exalted One's reveal of yourself in Rochester. So,
And the thing was, Rochester's building had kind of teased it for a few extra days of not canceling.
Mm-hmm.
And then AEW was kind of waiting to make a move, and I was like, okay, so there's, and like going to bed every night, like, oh, there's still hope, but knowing deep down that it wasn't going to happen. And I was honestly I was heartbroken. It was serendipitous to the point of WWE released me December 8th, which was with a 90-day clause. So my contract would have been up March 25th. So they released me, and my 90 days would have been up March 8th, which then somehow when I got the letter in the mail became March, I think, whatever the next Wednesday was. So they moved it 3 days so that it fell on that I couldn't do the Wednesday that week, if that makes sense. So they somehow, it was like a 94-day period. Ah. So I think that was one little extra fuck you to me. And so, but what happened was that gave me 9 days extra freedom, which made Rochester debut possible. As if they didn't release me, my contract would have been up March 25th. I wouldn't have been able to do Rochester.
Right.
So I thank you, WWE. But then, of course, it didn't work out.
Well, it's so interesting because, like I said, the same thing with Matt, because these are crazy times. Yeah. Obviously, we do what we can. Yep. And both debuts were still pretty killer.
Yeah, it was a very interesting. It just didn't feel right all day, I guess. I was very stressed out about it, more than I thought I would be. And not, I think, as excited or pumped up as I should have been. And then it came on like super fast. Like they're like, well, the tag match is in the ring. You guys are next. And I was like, holy shit, it's time to go. And then that's when it got keyed up and I was all pumped up. And like doing the promo and that with the way it came out, I felt really good about everything. And I didn't see it until I was standing in the ring behind Christopher Daniels. So I'm there watching my work and I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. I'm like, oh no, I got to do other work. And so, yeah. But yeah, it just didn't feel right. But then when it was done, I was like, man, that did feel right.
Well, and we have to do what we can.
Yeah.
And either, okay, we could have just stopped everything. Right. But it's still, I thought, you know, you have to continue forward.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is like, Tony very specifically texted me and said, hey, man, if you don't want to do this, we won't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote back. I was like, no, man, I'm all in for Wednesday. Just let me know what you need me to do.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing. Like, I had a way out if I wanted it, but I just didn't think... I've been cooped up for so long, and I think I told you this last week, is I want to get out. I want to do something. I need to be creative. I need to like just fly a little bit. So even that little bit last week was something.
And that was my point too. It's like, okay, we can just put a cap on everything, but who knows when we're back in front of people. Let's just put a cap on the big one
of the
Blood and Guts. Let's take it all the way there, and then we can figure out what to do as we go.
And that was my other thought process. So if I say I don't want to do this, when does it become okay to do again, or when, you know, when it could be months.
Right.
So then I just didn't want to be locked up that much longer.
Yeah, so exactly. I, especially when we build these stories to a peak. And once again, there are a million people watching at home, right. Million people plus.
Right.
It just would be so much cooler if we could have done it. But hey, that's life. That's right. How it goes, right?
Yep.
So let's talk about your journey to get to AEW in the first place. There's a lot to talk about. We just mentioned earlier, the last time we did this,
Jeddah.
We were in Jeddah, and you told me about the Mecca, the arrow on the wall. But the funny thing was, that was my I think that was the first time. My second time there was my last ever show with WWE, which I believe was your last ever show in WWE.
So I did a randomly. I had been kind of sent home again after an angle with Roman and Daniel Bryan, and randomly just got word that, hey, you're going to Saudi Arabia. And I was like, for what? And they're like, oh, we have this battle royal to determine. I don't even know. I think maybe a U.S. title shot. And funnily enough, the people there were chanting my name the entire match. So it was actually a pretty cool experience.
Well, let's go further back, though, because when we the time in Jeddah, the first time, I had come back in 2015 with the idea of, I don't know when I can come back on TV. I'm just going to do house shows.
Yep, which is a wonderful idea.
Well, and it's because then Michael Hayes goes, Vince will never let you do that. Yeah. And then, of course, he has Vince. He's like, whatever you want to do. And so basically, I'm working these 65 shows is what it was, with no angle. And I think half the matches were with Cesaro and half of them were with
you. Yep, we did a whole bunch,
And we had great matches. And I remember Arn Anderson was like, this guy's a hoss. He's going to be great. And it seemed like you were a guy that, like, everyone knew you've got something. This guy, he can talk, you know, all these things.
So I think the way I do talk, Vince doesn't see a person that looks like me talking like me. And I don't think he could get over that. He saw a backwoods hillbilly who talked in a southern drawl, that, and being from Rochester, New York, and being somewhat eloquent, he didn't understand, and just didn't compete with him. And Arn, I think, was maybe to the detriment, was one of my biggest supporters in meetings. And Arn would even say that. Arn would say, hey, man, I'm just going to stop speaking up for you because I don't think it's doing you any favors.
Right,
you know, so I had my supporters, just not, I guess, vocal ones, not ones that were willing to go to bat for me to a point. And once I fell into a role, no matter what I pitched, no matter what I showed anybody, it just, I wasn't digging my way out of it to that one, to the audience of one.
But there was that one point where you had like a run for the Intercontinental Championship. Maybe you might have even won the Intercontinental Championship.
Won the Intercontinental Championship. So, had it for, I think, 27 days. Mm-hmm. And had a hell of a, like, the next, I think, 4 or 5 months, I worked Dolph on the all the house shows and had a blast. Had a great ladder match with Dolph. Like, that was probably the peak.
And the ladder match was on a pay-per-view.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah.
In his hometown. Got my wife to worry about me because she was live and she thought I got hurt, so I knew I did a good job.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of like the peak. In, but even then, like, don't think I won a match on TV with the belt. Did a bunch of DQs, lost a bunch of matches, and like it almost was like I lost favor almost instantly as soon as I won the belt. It was like, okay, here you go, and then it was like didn't even get a chance to do anything with it. Pitched a whole bunch of different things for angles, for ideas to change the character, and then he just wasn't buying them.
What were some of the ideas that you had to change the character?
So I wanted to be a collector of some sort, almost like, so I'm very much into serial killers and stuff like that. So I wanted to collect something from each person I would beat, and then the problem just became that I wasn't beating anybody. So it was hard to collect from people to do that. I also wanted to be maybe a smart monster, a very intelligent monster, where I could speak like I do in a very intelligent way and like break my opponents down in a way, certain way that I wasn't doing in the Wyatt family, and then just have the same matches I was having and look the same exact way. So be this slovenly character, but just very also intelligent, almost like a Bruiser Brody. And again, like, I just don't think he could see that way of talking. And I remember going into his office and him telling me, hey, I want you to do a southern drawl. And I was like, sir, I'm from Rochester, New York. I think it's
going to be a Yankee.
I was like, I think it's going to sound really, really fake. And he goes, well, just do me a favor. And he goes, we don't want it to sound fake, but do me a favor and try it. And I did it for him. And he goes, yeah, I don't like that. And so literally walked out and thinking, well, that's gone. It's never going to come up again. And then next week in the script, it was like specific, like Luke Harper, do a southern accent. And then it was from there.
Which is so strange, because then he moves on with Rowan,
yep,
and gave him a gimmick for a short period of time where he was the intelligent,
yep,
monster.
Exactly. So I don't know if it's he just didn't know the difference between us. Or, and also, the other thing is me and Rowan constantly just always found each other somehow, no matter what. Like, I think Vince saw it as we were a team and we're always together, and that's what it was. He didn't see us apart by any stretch. Mm-hmm. So no matter what would happen, he would always bring us back together.
Right. Yeah, because that's just, and yeah, you can see these things. Like, I talked about this with Matt Hardy last week, mm-hmm, when you look at like a John Morrison, he goes away, right, does all these great things, comes back, and a week and a half later, he's Miz's tag team partner.
Right, exactly.
Exact same spot as, mm-hmm, as when he left, right?
And so even after the Intercontinental title run, I then was able to do same character, but they did the thing with Randy Orton and Bray where Randy got in the group and I was the one that kind of sniffed him out. Like, this guy's a snake. He's bad for us. Like, he shouldn't be in this group, where Bray was just kind of like, no, we're welcoming everybody in. And I told the writers before it even started, like, organically, guys, I'm going to get over because I'm going to be the smarter one here who sees it. And I'm going to be looking at the bad guy like, fuck you. And they were like, no, that's not how it's going to work. It's not how it's going to be written. I said, okay. And literally each week, my crowd reaction would go up. And all the way through the thing, we did the angle with Randy. He turned. I got over. I got all the way to a championship match, Battle Royal, with, I think, me and AJ were last two. We did the spot where we were supposed to go to the floor, hit it at the same time to do a match the next week. In rehearsal, hit it, no problem. Absolutely beautiful. Of course, in the actual execution of it, I f***ed it up a little bit. My ass like slipped on the apron, and I either touched first or he did. But it was pretty obvious that one of us touched first. They shot around it, and they explained, no, they touched same time. And then the next week, AJ, who was the heel, ended up making me tap and pinning me in the same match. Like, they restarted the match, and I was like, yep, this is the end.
Yeah. This is the burial.
Yep, this is it.
And so then, were you off for a while?
So then, after that, I was off TV for 8 months. I did dark matches every single week. I'd tell them, I was like, let me do the dark matches, because I knew I'd go out there, they would chant my name, and I would just think like, oh, maybe Vince is watching this week. And literally nothing ever came of it. And we used to joke during these 8 and 10 man matches. Like, I would just sit on the apron, and people would chant my name, and it was wonderful. But there was nothing coming from it. Mm-hmm. And I would do very few house shows. And then next thing was the Bludgeon Brothers.
I mean, I'm asking this question more as a rhetorical question. I mean, it's so frustrating.
Oh, my God. You have no idea.
Maybe
you do, actually.
I don't have an idea of ever being off TV, but I have an idea of just being set aside.
Yep.
You know? So I left in 2005 for that reason. Yep. But when I first got there, even in 99, I would go and have conversation with Vince, and I know he wasn't really listening. Would you go talk to Vince?
Oh yeah. We chatted many, many times. He was always very honest with me about, like, he's like, I just don't have anything for you right now. And you know,
that's the worst thing to hear.
And it's like, okay. And like, even the writers would try. I had a very good friend named Nick there who would try everything, you know, to help me get something.
It was Nick.
Nick the Dick.
How you doing? Yeah. The yes, looking guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So
kinda look like a weirder Carano or something like that.
Oh, I don't want to say that to him.
No, but he had the slick hair.
Yeah, absolutely. I just don't want to hurt his feelings.
New York guy.
A good looking New York kid.
Yeah, exactly.
So we would try and we would brainstorm, and I would be texting people weekly, the writers, like, just, you know, hey, anything in the meetings? And then, you know, the name would get brought up and it would go away, and it just, I knew there was nothing coming. Like, mm-hmm, you could almost sense it. And yeah, it was literally the most frustrating thing I could imagine. And as a career, like, so I'm wrestling weekly on these TVs, but then you just go sit in catering and watch these shows, and you're like, man, I know where I could fit in on these. I know I can make an impact. And it's just,
and like I said, like, I'm not saying this as mm-hmm, blind praise. Like, I really enjoyed working with you, and not just as a, you know, as a punching bag. Like, you had great mind. You could talk. We did stuff sometimes. I don't know if we did promos in the ring, but I always knew you could talk.
And that was the frustrating part, is like, you don't want to believe your own hype in a way, but also you believe in yourself.
Right.
And you know what you can do. And so then I would start doubting myself too. It's like, well, maybe I don't have it. Maybe I, and this happened actually last week with AEW, where it's like, hey, go do this promo. And coming from WWE, it's like, okay, well, what do you want me to talk about? And it's like, well, whatever you want, this is your promo. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and so then it's like, the stress was like, holy shit, like, so now I have no one to blame. So if it's not good, it's on me. And it's like, can I do this? And so then it became that whole thing too. And it's just like a roller coaster of,
well, let me tell you this. So we did a show at the Daily's Place months ago, June or something like this. And it was a pay-per-view, like a fight TV pay-per-view. Okay. And my thing was that we were doing a pull apart with Hangman Page, and I had a promo. And exact same thing that you just said. It's like, all right, Jericho, you've been told you're a good talker. You consider yourself a good talker. Now you're going out on live TV with no rehearsal and no script. And no one is like, now you, I was never a guy that would bitch about it because I had a lot of creativity, but I would always have to bitch about this. This has to get approved by Vince. Exactly. Now, no one's approving anything and no one even knows what I'm going to say.
Right.
You think you're good? Prove it. And I was really nervous, like freaking almost 30 years in. Went out there, did the promo, and as soon as I was done, I was like, you know what? Yeah. Of course I can do this. This is what I do.
And that's the same thing I thought when I was watching in the ring. I was like, that was, you know, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
And, but that's the thing too. Like, you now have this opportunity and people have told you, hey, you're good at this.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, okay, well, I better be now or it's on me.
That's great. You have no one else to blame.
Nope, nobody.
You can't. Yeah.
And like even Cody came in the room and he's like, well, what do you got? And I read it. And I totally stumbled over everything I was going to say to him. Just, I don't even know. And he goes, okay, go ahead. Good luck. And he just left. And I was like, well, here we go.
Yeah. Either you can do it or you can't.
Exactly. And so then after that, I was like, man, this is good. And then from there, it's just like, okay, now I'm ready to go. Like, let's just, I'm looking for. Then we did another one that evening, which I think is going to air this week, which I love. And it's just like, again, like, hey, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay.
And so, that's kind of what wrestling's all about.
Right. And that, it, so, but like being in WWE for 8 years, I didn't remember that.
Me
and
too.
It's like, so you used to be Brody Lee and you used to do all this fun stuff and have these matches and stuff. And it's like, man, I don't remember.
Yeah.
And so, but now it's like slowly like starting to come back. And I don't think I've even hit a stride yet, but I think I'm eventually going to just be, again.
It's been 1 week with no people. I mean, but see, this is why, like, and we'll talk about this. When you first asked for your release, the first guy that I called was Tony. I'm like, dude, what do we think about this guy? Like, we should get him.
Right.
And if they released every single person in WWE, we wouldn't take every single person. There's very few we would get.
Yep.
But and there's got to
be a fine line of that.
Yeah, but there's certain ones that you can see, like, this is a guy that was nothing there that could be something here. Right. And you definitely fall in that category.
But then again, that's, so in my psychotic head, like, that's the stress of it all too. It's like, hey, all these people believe in you. Chris Jericho believes in you. Tony Khan believes in you. Cody Rhodes believes in you. And these are people that texted me and told me this. And it's like, okay, well, now I don't want to make them look bad. Mm-hmm. And then like, so then the stress of, can you do this anymore? Mm-hmm. And being off for so long, it's like, hey, can you still go? So we'll see.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Let's go back to when you were off TV for 8 months. Was Rowan hurt at the same time?
That I don't remember. So we used to go through a thing where we would kind of get hurt at different times. I dislocated my patella, then he tore his bicep, and then I or injured his elbow, and then tore his bicep later. But we kind of like, it was in between each other. I think he might have been off when I was not at, when I was off TV, he was off like off at home. So I don't think that was even a possibility. And then it became like, well, Vince wants to put you guys back together and give you a big push. And he wants you guys to be like Demolition. And I was like, man, I don't know if we could wear Demolition gear in the year 2018 or whatever it was. I don't know if that'll fly. And he was actually cool enough to let us kind of revamp it and pitch him our own creative ideas. And Rowan, more than me, like had great ideas for our look and stuff. And I think through, you know, Kim, she was a huge help of it.
Kim Deal, yeah. She makes all of our gear.
She was huge help for like the ideas and stuff like that. And
let's talk about this for a second. So Vince, like, did he actually say, "I want you to be like Demolition"? Was there any kind of looks discussed?
We were shown a picture of Demolition and said, "This is what he wants you guys to be." So literally a picture of Demolition. And Creative Services showed us some other pictures, and it was just very Demolition-ish.
Very 80s, yes. You know. Because even the Demolition look, because, you know, Demolition obviously a ripoff of Road Warriors. Right. And even that looked kind of strange, because you had kind of two guys that weren't Road Warrior types.
Exactly.
Like older dad types wearing, like, bondage gear.
Me and Rowan are just a couple of dads, you know, so...
But Rowan is into the Viking metal.
Yeah, Rowan's way more into the Viking than me.
Yeah.
And even this, like, a funny thing about this last run is he would give me, we did this thing when I came back where he was like, had these death metal t-shirts on, Viking metal shirts. Mm-hmm. And he would give me some because I'm so clueless on that genre. And so finally I got a Snapcase one. I was like, no, I know this band. I'm going to wear this. But yeah, so then a funny story with the Bludgeon Builder gear, we finally get it in, we put it on, and I'm like, holy, we look like a couple of fucking idiots. Like, I just wasn't feeling it. And people were like, no, I think it looks cool. And I'm like, I have kick pads on and just a tight, and I never...
Tell us about the outfit. What was it?
So it was a singlet top, these crazy pants just with like shit all over them, and like lots of stitching, lots of weird, and then these giant trench coat jackets with hoods, one sleeve. We had a giant mallet that we carried around that we were not allowed to call sledgehammer because...
Obvious reasons.
Obvious.
That one's taken.
And so we have to put these outfits on. And they said, well, Vince wants to see them. I said, all right. So we put them on, and Rowan's like, I don't want to put the whole thing on. I was like, you got to put the whole thing on.
Everything.
Yeah, I was like, put it all on, buddy. And so we put it all on, and we go smack on his door. And he yells, come in. And we open the door, and he's getting a massage. And Larry, the trainer, is massaging his, I believe his calf even. And he's cackling as we walk in. Larry's just looking at me like, and I'm like, you motherfucker. Oh. And Vince like looks up and he goes, yep, love it. And I go, well, did you want to see the other? He goes, no, love it. And he just puts his head back down to keep getting the massage, and we walk out. And that was that.
You learned something about the timing yes. of when to go into Vince's office. I had one of the greatest ideas I've ever come up with. It actually involved the Wyatt family. I won't get into the whole thing, but for SummerSlam with Shawn Michaels, and like, you know, Wyatt family attacks me, and yep. I have no one I can trust except for the one man that I know I could go to the
right.
to the death with, and, you know, call Shawn Michaels. And I had it all plotted out, and Vince, when I pitched it to him, was eating a steak. And I had asked three different people, has he eaten already? Yes. Has he eaten already? Yes. Yep. As soon as I got in there, he was extra hungry that day and started eating his second meal. And he was not paying attention to anything. The famous, silence. I gave him the whole thing, silence. And he just looks up at me and goes, bad cow. I'm like, what bad cow? This steak is tough. I'm like, what about my great ideas? And like, what else you got? I'm like,
yep.
I should have known.
Yep. I've pitched many of things to him where he's like just chowing on a salad or something. And like, you hand him to him, and he's like, yep, I'll look at these on the plane. And you walk out, you're like, you're not going to look at those.
And had you come in 20 minutes later, he might go, this is great.
Exactly. And that's just the thing. Like you said, I used to have people tell me too, like, hey, man, he literally just got in there. He's not eating anymore. So run.
Jimmy Kelly.
Yep. And then you run in there and it's like, nope, he's eating again.
Or Triple H is there or something's in there.
Oh, yeah. There's always something going on.
If you get the right, it's like a... It's like the right temperature of a shower. If it's too cold or too hot, you're screwed. If it's just right, but it's rare. So what were you guys supposed to call your giant sledgehammer things?
Mallets. And so we had a main. They became an action figure, so that was cool. Like, we carried those things around and never used them. And they want us to bring them to Saudi Arabia. And I remember, I think we were in a meeting with Vince, and I said, sir, like, if we check these, they're going to disappear. And if we try to bring these on a plane, they're going to arrest us. And he's like, yeah, it's a good idea. So he brought them over on his personal plane.
Were they actual mallets?
No, they were huge wood mallets. Heavy as hell. Yep. They were very dangerous. There's one thing when we first did with the New Day where I swung it, and Kofi's like backpedaling out of the ring on his belly. And I swung it and smacked the mat. And he told me that I dented the boards when they took the ring apart. And I was like, oh, cool.
Where did the name come from?
I think that was a Vince call. Like, he's like, can't you feel the word bludgeon? Can't you just feel it? And like, in my head, I'm like, I'm like, no, I don't feel at all. And then once we got rolling with it, it was cool because me and Rowan do make a good tag team. And like once we finally got along, like we're good at it. But like at first it was pulling teeth for me. Like I just wasn't feeling it.
And what do you mean once you finally got along when you first?
Well, when we first got together, the wife and I despised the man.
The wife and
I hated him.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We roomed together, we tagged together, and we were just literally constantly together. And he snores more than any man I've ever met in my life. So rooming with him was hell. Like if I didn't fall asleep first, I didn't sleep. So I would wake up hating him, and then we'd be calling a match, and I would just be thinking about how much I hated him. So it was a bit of a to-do, but like in the long run, we became really great friends, and the last run was just a lot of fun with him.
Very interesting guy. So my first meeting with him was he went to the same church that I used to go to just down the road here. And my pastor was like, yeah, there's this guy. We're going to slam Satan for a Sunday afternoon thing. Will you come film something? And I'm like, you know, like, I don't really want to, but pastors asked me. I said, well, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to wrestle with anybody. So we got a guy here. He's like in the W Minor Leagues. I'm like, whatever. They're all in the W Minor Leagues. Sure, they are. Yeah. I go in there and it's him. Yeah. He had a shorter beard, but it's like, this fucking like 7 foot tall, like almost mute.
Yeah, he's humongous.
And something happened with it. We hit him with a chair or something. So we worked this thing out.
Did he sell it?
Then when I first saw, I think he had to because it was like he was Satan and I was Jesus or whatever the hell, you know, typical Sunday morning thing. Anyways, fast forward. My favorite Rowan story is like we said, he's a big metal guy. And we had a festival somewhere in Wisconsin or somewhere close to where he lives. I think he's in the Twin Cities or something. Yep. He's in Minneapolis?
Yep, he's in Minneapolis.
Somewhere close to there. And he goes, yeah, someone text me or DM me, I'm going to come to your show. I'm like, great, come down, come to the show. Like, Dee Snider from Twisted Sister was on the bill, and we were on the bill, and there's some guys that he was checking off. And so I'm on the main stage where Dee is playing. I see him in the crowd, and he waves at me, and I said, like, you know, like 3 o'clock, like we're at 3 o'clock, and I point, like we're on the second stage, and he's like, give him the, I go, we do the gig. He's in the back watching our gig, and then when I'm done, I'm texting him. I can't find him. He's disappeared. And then, like, the next day or 2 days or 3 days, I'm like, well, what happened? He goes, well, I left. I said, why? He said, why? You didn't think you'd want to? Well, I didn't think you'd want to say hi to me. Like, I was looking at you, say, meet me at stage 2 at 3 o'clock. Why would I not want to say hi to you?
Very unassuming,
right? Yeah, very, very Rowan-esque thing. Yeah, right?
He's a sweetheart of a man, though. Like,
yeah,
he's a strange bird. And once you get through that, and you learn to love it. It's just that's him.
Yeah,
and that's who he is. But like, we're deep down, just a sweetheart of a man. We still have regular contact with each other, and. He might have mentioned. I don't want to give him trouble. Actually,
what did he think about this cage, and then the big reveal of the toy plastic spider?
I don't know. I remember watching it live because someone had kind of stooged off to me like, "Hey, man, they're gonna do the thing tonight," and
the reveal.
Then that thing comes out, and then they just killed it, and you know, the next week it's just dead. And I'm like, and that's almost the same thing as my career trajectory too. It's like, okay, we're going to build you up. Because same thing, they built him up. He didn't lose a match. He was beating people weekly.
Yeah.
And then Aleister Black beat him 2 weeks in a row for no reason. And then the spider was revealed and killed. And now who knows what's going
to
happen with him.
And you know he didn't do anything to piss anybody off because he's not that type of guy.
No, I think he's too nice. And that's the same thing I thought about me in WWE is I might have been too nice as well.
Yeah.
And one of my last, kind of the one that was like, this place was, we were in Detroit and I sat outside Vince's office I'd been off for so long and I'd given him pitches. Like,
is this after the Bludgeon Brothers?
After and like kind of it was over again before I asked for my release. So this is probably like early 2019 maybe. Mm-hmm. And I sat outside his office for 3 hours and they're just doing the meetings and stuff. And finally, like everyone leaves and everyone's like, hey, I was last. Michael Hayes, I think, walks out and he's like, I'm the last one. And I knock on the door and he goes, I don't want to see anybody right now. And I was like, motherfucker.
He knew you were out there?
No, not at all. Oh, wow. And I was like, God damn it. So I leave and like, I'm going to leave. And like, I put, thrown my shit in the garbage, like my pitches in the garbage. And I was like,
this. Your pitches?
Yeah. So finally, like, Sean Spears now still worked there. And he goes, no, man. He goes, he's in his other, like, that was the production meeting. He's now in his other office.
His real office. Yes. Yeah.
And so finally, like, before I left to drive home, I gave him one final pitch of, I don't even remember what they were. And, but same thing, like he's eating salad or something. And he's like, yep, I'll look at these on the plane. And I was like, I knew that was it. So then I remember somebody gave me his number and I was like, all right, well, what do I have to lose at this point? And I texted him and I was like, hey man, I'm just wondering what's going on in my career. Like what? Yeah. Like I literally, whatever, like
Hail Mary pass.
Yeah. And this was right before Mania of 19 or 18, maybe 19. This
of the year. Last year. Yeah.
And he's like, he asked me, he goes, why aren't you in the Andre Battle Royal? And I said, sir, that's a question that you should probably be able to answer. And I remember writing that back. Me and my wife were driving. She goes, you really wrote that? I said, yeah. What? I mean, I have nothing to lose. And he goes, well, you are now. And I said, cool. So then I remember that week in the meetings, he had chastised some of the writers like, how do we leave this guy off and him not have anything? Let's come up with something for him. And so I'm like, oh, it worked. And did the Battle Royal. And I remember we got a sheet and I was one of the last two or three. And I was like, cool, here, we're getting started. This is perfect. And then when we got there, they had kayfabed us on the end of the Battle Royal. And there's like 10 other people after me.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, so demoralized again. But I was like, no problem. And then I think, I don't even remember who told me, but they're like, well, they have an idea for you now. And I was like, okay, cool. And it's like, I was going to be Sami Zayn's heater. Mm. And I was like, you know what? I go, man, like, that's exactly what I don't want to do. Like, that's what I've done my entire career. I don't want to do that anymore.
Be like a sidekick.
Yeah, I don't want to be behind anybody. I want to just go do my thing. And so then I said, but you know what? I'm going to make it work. We'll go from there and we'll figure it out. And 2 days later, I was supposed to debut on SmackDown, I believe, after Mania. And then it got canceled. Like, oh, we're not doing it. Hmm. And I just said, okay, that's it. We went home to talk to my wife. And she goes, yeah, just, you know, if you don't want to be there, just don't be there. Mm-hmm. You know, ask them for your release. And I did. And I remember Vince called me. We had two, like, 20-minute conversations where we just talked like humans. And it was very, you know, like Vince is very almost robot-like in ways. But when you talk to him, it's just he's a good person almost. And
that's when he opens up. That's when you see the real Vince.
Yeah, exactly. And it was crazy. It was like, he's like, well, what do you want? Do you want more money? Do you want to push? And I said, no. I said, at this point, I don't want either of that. And I also didn't realize at the time that other people had asked for their releases, but not publicly. So a bunch of people had done that. And Hunter even told me later, he goes, we can't release you or it's going to make like people are jumping off the sinking ship.
Let's take a couple steps back. So when you asked for your release, that's when you originally tweeted it or Instagrammed it, right?
So they were in Montreal that week and I called Carano like, I want to say 15 times and he didn't answer. And I was like, I want my release. Like finally like texted him. Like I was like, we really need to talk. And I talked to him finally. I was like, hey man, I want my release. And he goes, okay man, we'll just, you know, we'll talk about it or whatever. And I go, no, like legit, like I want my release. And then I just put the thing up on, and I never said anything negative about them online. I just said, look, I asked for my release. Thank you for everybody for everything. And cause I wanted to do it publicly cause I knew that the court of public opinion was very important to the next move I was going to make. And to have the support was important. And I also didn't want them to be able to control my narrative anymore. Mm-hmm. Where it was like, nope, we're just going to sit you at home. Mm-hmm. So now if they sit me at home, people know
the reason why
I wanted out of there. And I'm not just content with.
Was that your strategy to do that?
Yeah. And I honestly thought like, so Spears had done the same thing.
Right. He did.
A few months earlier and they granted his release. So I thought honestly that they were going to do it. And then after like the second conversation with Vince, he called me and said, hey man, for business reasons, I can't let you go.
Did he call you and tell you that? Yep.
And I said, okay, that's totally fair. I was like, it's your decision. Obviously, I signed the contract. No ill will on that respect. I said, can I get out? Because they had added 6 months to my contract for a wrist surgery that I had. And I said, can I get out in November? He goes, that's a question for somebody else. I said, okay.
Right.
I said, that's weird. Yeah. So then we kind of just left it at that. And then I just sat home for,
my God. Let's just stop it. It's interesting because what you said was the difference between the timing when Spears, mm-hmm. Dustin Rhodes was another one, although there was extenuating circumstances, which I can tell you later, but that window closed.
Yep. So
when I signed with AEW in January 9th, that's when it was like the shit's getting real.
Absolutely.
And after that is when everyone started getting raises. No one's getting released. Mm-hmm. And I think you were right in that kind of 1 or 2 months You mentioned early 2019,
yep.
right?
And so I asked for mine in April, but they kind of saw it coming up.
Right.
Like I've been home.
I think Spears might have asked in December or January.
Yeah, he was before that. Yep.
Right. Just right on the cusp. Yep. I remember saying, it's like Star Wars. The shield is coming down and you just got out. Spears is the last one before the wall
and
closes.
And I remember people being in there, and I there's a very trusted one that I'll tell you after this who it is, but he was like, hey, man, I think they're going to do it. Like, they batted it around, and like, I'm pretty sure they're going to give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that'd be awesome. Because now I know everything that's coming to fruition and like all this stuff. And like, and then Hunter had called me. He's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to wrestle. He goes, do you want to go to New Japan? And I was like, yes, 100%. I was like, can we make that happen? He goes, yeah, I think I can make that happen. And then, of course, never happened. And nothing ever came of it. And then we talked about going to NXT. And that never happened.
I mean, you think going to NXT is a no-brainer.
Right. And so I thought it was too. And then it just never happened. And then fast forward to, I think, October, I get a call. Or Claudio, he goes, hey, can Brian call you, Danielson? I said, yeah, sure, of course. So Brian calls me and he goes, hey, man. He goes, how are you feeling right now? And I was like, I'm just waiting for my contract to end. I got 6 more months. They're just not going to do anything with me. So I'm just waiting for it to end. He goes, well, do you want to come back and work? And I was like, with who? He's like, well, me. And I said, yeah. So Brian's one of the people in the business that I respect more than almost any, like one of the top guys to me in all my career. And so I was like, yeah, of course I'll do that. And he's like, well, Rowan, they kind of built the storyline of who attacked Roman and it ended up being Rowan. And so in my head, I was like, well, even if this doesn't work out for me, maybe I can kick off something for Rowan before I leave. Mm-hmm. And then, so then of course we go through the angle where they change the finish on us. We're supposed to beat them. They change it to them up in the pay-per-view.
So you did come back for,
came back. I think it did 2 months, ended up doing like 3 tours. So of course, perfect timing of my idiocy.
I was like, Europe and all that stuff. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
They flipped the finish and then literally they did the draft for like a week after the Fox debut and they're like, nope, you guys are staying together. You're going to go on a tag run. I was like, okay, cool. This will be a fun way to end my WWE run. And then the next day Rowan gets drafted to Raw without them really telling us. And it all just came to an end again. And they sent me home.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So many little things that I have to ask you. So first of all,
sorry,
but that's great though. But like I said, so when you talk about the originally going back to the Bludgeon Brothers, mm-hmm. and you guys are this whole new gimmick and mm-hmm. new push and all this sort of stuff, did you get a big push?
We did. We won the tag titles at WrestleMania. We wrestled the Usos and New Day. And again, here's another thing, like disappointing WWE thing is New Day, Usos, and us wrestling. And in my head, I'm like, this could be one of the greatest tag matches of all time at WrestleMania. And we get to the rehearsal or whatever, and they're like, okay, you guys have 9 minutes, including entrances.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God.
And let me just say something people don't realize. Entrances at a WrestleMania stadium.
Yes. And it's New Day. They got 30 minutes of entrance.
They're coming out of a freaking cereal box or some shit. Yeah.
So it was just like, so we rushed through it and did what we could. And it's still, there's a very cool moment of me holding the belt up and spotting my wife and son and kids in the front row. So there's a cool moment there, but still it's just like CM Punk once told me when we were feuding in 2014, I think he goes, just so you know, man, like everything in WWE could always be better.
Mm.
And it's just like the same thing. Like that's, and it rolls through my head all the time.
What a great quote. Yeah.
And back then I'm like, no, this guy, like there's no way that that's true. And it's been true almost every, the Wyatt family could have been better. Mm. The Bludgeon Brothers could have been better. That match could have been, and it's like, man, you just give us another 10 minutes and we could
It's hard though. Yeah. And this is one thing that I always had a problem with WrestleMania where they would do a four hour show, 7 hours now, but with all the packages and this and this, everybody's still getting 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where you have to realize as a pro, Mania is built around two or three matches. Yep. Those are the ones that get the time. Yep. Those are the ones that be
on it, right?
And those ones will be the show stealers. The rest, as hard as it is, I remember me and Regal opened the show once, 18, 17, whatever. They gave us 9 minutes. Right. I'm like, this, if we had 30 minutes, but it's like you're not going to get 30 minutes for this opening match, and you have to bite the bullet and realize like it sucks, but it's just the way it is, right?
And that's the thing is like you learn to accept that, and you learn that like. That, like you said, it is the way the things are, and you, there's nothing you're going to do to change it. And we were even, I think we followed the Ronda Rousey and Angle versus Hunter and Steph.
Rock was out there, wasn't it? Yeah, or it was Angle. That was, Angle.
And they went like 15 minutes over.
Oh, the match. Yeah, of course.
And like, it's a sick match, and you're just like, we're in Gorilla. Like, they're like, well, we don't know what's going to happen. And in my head, I'm like, but they're going to cancel our match. Like,
which is even worse, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, this is the, so me and Rowan never held the tag titles as the Wyatt family or as any. And so this would be our first time winning them in WWE. And I'm like, this, there's no way they're going to cancel this. Like,
so what was the final straw that kind of broke up the Bludgeon Brothers?
Rowan, so we wrestled SummerSlam against New Day and he caught Xavier Woods and tore his bicep. Mm. And I remember this motherfucker was a tough son of a bitch because we're holding the belts up and he's holding them up with the hand. He like mumbled something to me, and like I had been selling my arm, and I'm really good at selling my arm. you know, no big deal. I fooled a couple of people, so I walk into Gorilla, and I think Road Dogg says to me is like, as Rowan walks in, he goes, "Hey, is Harper okay?" And Rowan, for the first time I've ever seen him like really fight, he goes, "You should be fucking asking me." And he stormed out of Gorilla, and like I had no idea. I thought he had to take a shit or something. Like, I honestly had no idea because, like, he did the rest of the match, acted like nothing happened. And then I get to the trainer and they're icing his arm. And like, it's like his bicep had rolled up his arm. Mm. And I'm like, oh my God. So then they come in, they're like, hey, can you wrestle Tuesday? Because we won the match. And they're like, we need you to drop the titles. And like, of course, him being the great employee that he is like, yeah, of course. And like he talked to Dugas or whatever and like not going to hurt it anymore. Mm. And we had probably one of our best matches as the Bludgeon Brothers on the SmackDown after SummerSlam, this crazy falls, no rules thing with the New Day. And yeah, and that was it.
So then he's out for 6 months and then are you on the shelf again?
That's when I went home again and just kind of sat home and waited.
That's the hard thing about being in a tag team, right?
Yeah, and that's especially with us being married so much is like if one of us went out, the other one was kind of screwed.
Which is funny because like I said 3 years earlier, you and I are working house shows every night as singles and it's great. Yep. You easily could have put you on the road at
and
least.
And that's what I kind of pitched them too. Same thing. Like I was like, let me go do house shows. I'll work with whoever you want.
Yeah.
I don't need to be on TV.
Yeah.
And it was just like, let's just leave you home.
So when you mentioned that when you asked for your release and you said that for business reasons, you said that Hunter had spoken to you as well about, you know, what do you want what else is he saying to you during this time frame?
Almost the same thing. Like, what do you want? What do you want to do?
And are they mad at you for going public?
I think they didn't tell me they are, but I think clearly yes, just because now they can't, like you said, they can't control the narrative anymore of why they're not using me. People now know that I'm not happy about it. And I think to them, it was like, well, come on, man. Like, what the fuck? And like, Carano had asked me a few days, like, hey, just take that down. I think that'll change Vince's mind. And I'm like, come on, man. Like,
just take that down.
Like, I'm not stupid at this point. Like, I've been through it. Like, I'm not going to just take it down. So, like, you took it down? Yep, you got your release.
Yeah.
And it was, again, like, it's like, hey, we just can't make it look like you're jumping off this ship that's sinking or whatever. And I was like, look, I was like, I have nothing to do with anybody else that asked for their release. Like, I'm a completely separate entity. I have my reasons for doing it. You know them. We've talked about it. So I just want to wrestle. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like it was becoming a thing where I was running out of time and it becomes like, do I want to do this? I mean, I don't want to run out of time. I want to do it while I still can. And it's like, and he's like, whoa, I can probably get you New Japan. I was like, okay.
So then do it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all I said. And I remember, I'm really good friends with Big E. And I remember telling Big E that day, I was like, he said, you know, he's going to get me. We're like, okay, well, let's see. And I'm just in my head. I'm like, there's no way. Like, it's just not.
What relationship does Triple H have with New Japan anyways?
At that point, I thought New Japan was either going to be bought or put on the network. Mm. And of course, neither happened. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. But again, like, I think there was just too many snafus to put a WWE talent on New Japan at that time.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting because I remember back, like, when I was leaving WCW, Johnny Ace said to me, you know, when I met him in a airport, '98,
right.
You know, if you want to come to All Japan or even just use All Japan as a negotiator. But the thing is, Johnny was the foreign booker for All Japan. So it's like, if you want to go to All Japan, I can make it happen.
Right, right.
That makes sense to me, right?
Exactly. And that was kind of my thought process, too. It's like, yeah, of course I want to do that. Mm-hmm. I was like, you could just release me and then I can do that.
Or even like we mentioned the NXT thing, like Finn is now NXT.
Right. And that's the thing. Like if you believe in me, and this is what was kind of the final straw of like, maybe you don't believe in me either, because if you did, it's very easy to say, okay, come to NXT, give me your ideas. Here's do what you want to do. And I would have done anything they wanted. I would have put any of their guys over. I didn't care about that. I just wanted to wrestle.
Yeah. And, or you could say, I've got some ideas for a new character. We can work on that.
And I don't know if they thought like, well, you're going to just up your stock and then leave. But at that point, it was like, man, what do you want me to do? Like, I have a year left on my contract.
Yeah, you're 8 months out, you know.
Who knows what's going to happen?
Right.
And so I was offered contracts on all the way up until the day we were still talking about a contract the day they called me to release me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I had been offered contracts.
To, like, renew?
Yep.
Even though you weren't doing anything?
Yep. Because that was their kind of, I think their MO at that point was like, let's just keep everybody.
Yeah, sign everyone to raises.
And I think they knew, like, I'm gone. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go to AEW as soon as I can.
Rhino told me that they offered him money basically saying, we're never going to use you. Here's a raise just to stay home.
Oh, yeah. It was money that, ungodly money, honestly. Like, I could never even imagine making that money in wrestling. And it was literally to stay home. And
there comes a point, what do you do as a performer, right?
It's insane because with two kids, a wife, and it's like, well, what do I do? Like, and thank God my wife was like, no, like, you need to get out and do something else. And so, yeah. But, man, it becomes quite the conundrum of
there's a lot
at what point does that.
And there's a lot of guys going through it. Like you mentioned, when you have kids, it's different. Because when we talked to Mox on the show here, he was like, how much money can I make? Because in 3 months with this great contract, I'm still going to be freaking miserable.
Right, exactly.
And then what's the point?
And that's what we discussed with my wife. I was like, okay, so we take this money and then in 6 months you're doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be crazy. You're going to be crazy.
Had there not been an AEW, because when you originally asked for your release, that was, I think, maybe the early days of AEW. But I know you're fairly tight with Chris Harrington, correct?
Yep, I am.
And yeah.
So I think he had signed a non-disclosure, so he couldn't really tell me too much that was going on. And it was like, man, at that point in time, it was like, let's just go wrestle. I was content on doing New Japan and independence.
Indies are hot.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like, and my thought process was NXT had signed everybody, and if AEW signs everybody on the independent circuit that's hot, there'll be nobody left for these shows. So I can be now the top guy in the independents and work New Japan in a lesser schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was content to do that in a heartbeat. I wanted to wrestle so bad. Like, it was crazy.
You're talking about, so the last 2 years, basically, out of those 24 months, it sounds like 14 to 18 months you're at home.
Yep, just sitting home. So, yeah, and then, like, again, having two kids, it was awesome. But again, like, having two kids, you want to get out of the house too.
Well, this is what you do.
Yeah, and that's the other, and like I said, like, I need to do it while I still can. And you're running out of time, and you're watching the time tick. And then I have athletes that are friends who are coming to the end of their careers, and it's like you're watching this happen live, and it's like, man, I don't want to be that yet. Like, I'm not ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was painful.
Mm.
But again, like you said, there's a point in time, like, what's the line of money you take that's not irresponsible to your wife and kids and like to be unhappy? Like, is it about me anymore? Who knows?
The difference thing is as well, though, and this is something that I've discussed with a few people, is that our schedule is once a week.
Right. And that's,
four pay-per-views a year,
mm-hmm.
you know? So even if you're prorated, okay, they offered me, you know, X amount of money in WWE, but their schedule, even though it's pared down a little bit, it's still looking at 150 days a year.
Right.
That's conservative. Probably closer to 175, too.
I think we were doing 225 plus the last, when we were Bludgeons, we were working everything, and it was like, it just becomes too much.
So compare that to, 60 to 70 dates, that puts a lot of perspective as well.
And that's the other thing. So now you can make the money, you can scratch the itch, and you can be home.
Right.
And it's like, man, this is too good to be true.
That's what I said. And then nothing against the fine people of, you know, Albany, New York, but my days of showing up on a Sunday to Binghamton, the Broome County Civic Broome Center County, on a Sunday afternoon.
We've worked there.
Those are many times. Those days are done. And I think also, too, it also seems that the WWE's system of having these Saturday, Sunday, Friday shows, it's almost archaic at this point because it's all based on TV.
And a whole nother thing is I have freedom now to do other things with an AEW contract that I couldn't do. I had movies turned down by WWE.
Like turned down by them.
Independent ones that were, you know, maybe either too violent or too, oh, we don't think this role is good for you, you know, and stuff like that. And like, you don't have a choice.
Fine, put me in one of your movies.
Exactly.
Then. Yeah.
And so now I have the freedom to do that. I have a freedom to do a limited amount of independence. I have a freedom to do New Japan if I want.
Oh, so you can do independence as well? Yep.
And that's kind of, that was kind of a big deal to me too, is like, I want that freedom to just do everything.
You keep mentioning New Japan. It seems like you would want to go there.
I would love to go to New Japan. Yeah. I've watched it my entire life pretty much, like from when I was, you know, just coming up from like those older matches. And it's like, and then once it blew up, it was like, okay, well, that's the place to be. And who knows in 6 months if my itch will be, like I said, scratched and I'll be like, oh, I don't need it. But I think there's some very intriguing matchups there, and almost like, I don't know, like I just want to wrestle around the world again and just do it on my own terms.
Had you been to Japan before?
Yeah, I used to do Dragon Gate, where I met Pac. Mm-hmm. We used to live together there. So he's crazy bastard.
He's doing great too. He's another guy.
Right.
It's one thing that I was expressing too. It's great to have another guy who has that television experience, live television experience, because we're in a company where there's a lot of new guys that don't even, we brought in Luther, who has been doing this for 30 years, finally got the big break, but this is 30 years of experience telling guys that are on TV after 2 years, don't take this for granted.
Yeah. So
it's a privilege, not a right.
I've talked about that. And that's one thing, like even now at my age and in the stage of my career, like there's nothing I would ever take for granted. Like, especially now, like this is a godsend at this point in my career. And like, and also the ability to make a difference in the industry is unreal feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like in 20 years, like, what am I going to be remembered for? So like, maybe it'd be helping change the business for good.
Yeah. Reigniting your career and being bigger than you've ever been by making this decision.
How could I ever take that for granted? Mm-hmm. And I'm also in a different place of life. Like, you sit at home for 8 months and you change the way you think, because those bits and pieces become very important. Even like pay-per-view match with Roman and Brian at the time, it was like, there's no way I'm taking this for granted. And like, I'll do whatever I need to do to make it good, because I just, it's fucking awesome to me.
Sure.
So,
you know, and that's the thing. That's one thing I love about AEW is we have a group of guys that a lot of us specifically made the choice not to go to WWE.
Right.
Most of us.
Right.
Even a guy like MJF, I could never, he said, I could never go to that system and have some time to do. Right. So to have another guy that made the choice, these are not guys like back in the WCW days or Impact days that are getting let go or getting fired or whatever. This is not what we are.
That's what I think, like them offering me a contract right up until the December 8th date, I feel like they released me to, again, try to finally control the narrative of, oh no, we released him. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
best of future endeavors.
Literally were talking to me numbers like last week.
Yeah.
Like, come on. But again, it made the roster debut, which didn't happen, very possible. So it was almost serendipitous to a point.
But there's guys there that should take that chance.
Absolutely.
And should say, you know, we want to leave. And they probably never will.
Right.
Because it's another thing too. Once you said, like, once you, there is a little bit of, I think, I don't know if Stockholm Syndrome is a good thing.
100%.
But when you get away from that bubble, like my first match in New Japan, that's when I realized, like, oh my gosh, really? Like, I don't have to tell you my whole match go over all these angles. We just do it?
Mm-hmm. And I also, like, the crowd, like, the way people are reacting, it's almost like they're part of the deal and they care more. And and again, like, I haven't been able to experience it, but I've had many people tell me. Also, walking into the building, I made a joke to Swags last week because they were checking our temperature. And I said, oh man, I said, maybe I'll go for a little jog and warm up and, you know, just head back home. And Swags literally turned to me and he goes, no man, it's not like that here.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay. He's like, you're going to want to come here.
Yeah.
And I think I have honestly like PTSD from almost being beaten down by the system in WWE.
Kick dog. Yeah.
Yes. And again, like, I can't, I don't want to speak ill of them because WWE gave me more in my life than I could ever dream of. But
agreed.
Again, yeah, but it's like, just, man, no, I just wasn't picked.
And that's the thing, like, everybody that, like, you know, Mox, yep. He doesn't say a lot, but he was like, I love this shit. I fucking love this shit. Yeah. And we're all working together to come up. Even the double swerve for Rochester was an idea that I had of like, why don't we do two? Because everyone thinks Matt is the exalted one.
Yep.
What if we do, oh my gosh, it's Brody.
And
then they forget about, and there's Matt too.
So for me, when they first explained it to me, they're like, hey, we're going to debut you guys on the same day. And in my head, instantly, WWE me goes, well, what the f***? Like,
right.
I've waited all this time to debut. Let it be about me.
Right.
And they go, well, no, it's this angle. And I go, oh, wow.
It's in Rochester, really, and you're good. The exalted
that's
one.
That's really good. Like, double. That's a good double debut.
I got that idea, and you'll remember this, is when I came back after being gone for a while. Miz was out there. Mm-hmm. I made the surprise, beat up Miz. Yep. Lights go out. Wyatt family beats me up.
Oh, yeah.
It's the double swerve. Right.
And it, honestly, it fits perfect.
Yeah.
Because, like, and I think Matt helped a ton the way he reacted to a lot of Uno's tweets and a lot of the way people talked to him, his free the delete and a lot of little Easter eggs that he threw in, like, really helped. And I honestly just had to stay silent the whole time. And
that's what we wanted. You're completely surprised.
Yep. And I think that's a problem sometimes with people in the industry, is they need to be heard and I'm like, man, if I just stay quiet, it's going to be way more impactful when I do show up.
What did you think when they first told you that you were the exalted one?
Nervous. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be compared to Bray. I didn't want to be compared to the Wyatt family. But then in my head, I'm like, well, no, I can make it better. And I can be better than that. I can be what it should have been.
There's a natural connection there, too.
Exactly.
The one thing I like that I heard this week is you're taking a guy that was always in the background, and now you're the leader.
Yep.
And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, exactly. That's what we're doing. Yep. And like you said, you think you're good enough?
Exactly. And
here's your shot.
That's the thing.
There's no bitching now, right?
And the other thing is like, man, what a spot. Like, hey, we're going to put you in the lead of this whole group that's been in a good spot for six months. That has been in a good spot the entire time AEW existed. Okay, cool.
Yeah. There's been a lot of reflection and thoughts on who the exalted one might be. And here it is. It's you. So that seems like a pretty damn good. Good. And like I said, there is a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy cult guy who now becomes the actual leader.
Absolutely. And I put the pressure on myself, and because you don't want people to say like, oh, you're just a knockoff, whatever. But I think that I can make it my own thing. And I think the vignette people see this week will put a totally different spin on what I am as a leader. And I think it's going to be cool.
Well, I loved your promo last week. I thought it was great. It was smart, one little inside jab, but more importantly, well-spoken.
Right.
And it's surprising what you said about Vince, because one of his biggest stars of all time is Kane, who is Martin now Vince. The mayor of Knoxville, who's read more books than I have and is very eloquent.
Right.
And has been given the chance to be that way over the years. It's the diversity. You want him to play a quiet psycho? Great.
Right.
You can do the same.
And that's why I don't think, that's thought provoking in a way, like, you're like, why the fuck is this guy talking like that? As opposed to just the hit you in the face with,
it's creepier.
I'm going to beat the shit out of you. Yeah. Like, why not tell him in an eloquent way you're going to beat the shit out of him?
And that's why, once again, if you're going to do something and switch companies, it has to be different. Yep. And this is now automatically
and
different.
Again, I don't think I don't remember having a shot at anybody. I just, you know, I just said out of touch old man. I don't know. That could be directed to anybody in the world.
I think it's your uncle.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to ask you a question. What is, I read your Instagrams all the time and you're always talking about Larry.
So I put up two pictures recently and people are very upset that the Larry term is gone. So I guess I'll just use this platform to say that is Larry the Trainer from WWE. When I first started my Instagram, he's like, how come you don't have an Instagram? And I didn't know anything about Instagram or Twitter or any of that shit. Mm. And so when I first started my Instagram, the quotes were underneath. He's like, hey man, you need to explain your pictures more.
Right.
So of course I would explain them by being like, hey Larry, and then I would explain the pictures. And he was like, come on man, stop putting my name. And that just became a thing. And so yeah,
it's great, because to me it was like, oh, you're crazy, hey Larry.
Well, that's the same thing with my Twitter. It was like I had these visions of it's whatever day, you know what that means, and people are like, well, what the f- does that mean? And I'm like, I don't know, what's it mean to you? And they're like, oh yeah, cool. And I'm like, got through that one.
You know, dude, like I said, I've known you for a long time. It's excited to see how excited you are. What is your overall, last few questions, what's your overall thought on your first week in AEW, and what do you want to do over the next 3, 6 months, year, whatever?
First day was incredibly stressful, but again, that was only stress I put on myself. No one else did that. But everyone was super good to me. It was just very refreshing almost. And to bring it back to what wrestling used to be. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had a match yet. And I think once that happens in front of a crowd, I really, really believe. But like, again, who knows when that will be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was just, again, like the creativity, like, hey, we want to talk for 2 minutes, whatever you want. And it's like, wow. Okay, cool. And yeah, I mean, I have a very clear vision of what I want Dark Order to be. And I think I can bring it up to a certain level that it should be at and make a huge impact. And again, like make a difference in the industry of professional wrestling.
Do you know Stu Grayson and Evil Uno?
Yep. We used to work together way back before I got signed.
Oh, cool.
We wrestled in C4 in Ottawa a lot. And then they did a bunch of Chikara shows and stuff like that. So.
Did you talk to him beforehand and say this? Yeah.
So me and Uno are pretty good friends. We had kind of fell out of touch for a while I was in WWE. But as soon as I found out, I was like, hey man, just so you know, I'm going to be your leader. He's like, oh, cool. And like, he's so cool with like everything that's going on. Like, he's very creative on his own right. And like, he's very open to everything. And we've just been bouncing stuff off of each other. So I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I think it's great. Last question for you. As you leave your last stage, your career behind, what's your favorite match that you had with Rowan?
Oh, man. I would probably say the one after the SmackDown after SummerSlam. With New Day, the no holds barred or whatever, where he had a torn bicep.
Torn his bicep.
Yeah, and he performed like a motherfucker that night. And yeah, that was kind of the symbolic end of everything too. So
sure,
very fitting.
It's interesting too, and I had to change Dean Ambrose to John Moxley on my phone. I just changed Luke Harper to Brody Lee on my phone. So R.I.P. Luke Harper.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, leaving that name and that character behind?
I'm not too upset about it, honestly. It like I said, it just feels fresh and I feel reinvigorated, man. Like, it's crazy. So, yeah. Luke Harper.
On that note.